Hey, friends. Thanks for joining us on the Equipping You podcast. Our prayer is that this podcast will encourage and equip Alliance pastors and leaders to live spiritually healthy lives and lead healthy churches. For more information about the Christ-centered Acts 1-8 Alliance family, visit equippingyou.org.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Equipping You Podcast. This is season 11.
11!
Episode 7. Oh, thank heaven for 7. 11.
Siete once.
Oh, my. You're doing so good, Alan.
Thank you. Your tutelage again, Terry.
So, we're coming to you today from Reynoldsburg, Ohio, home of Blacklick Woods Park. That has 72 holes of golf.
That's great.
Imagine what score I could make on that.
I could get a lot of strokes for my dollar.
Yeah, the possibilities are exponential.
They sure are. 72. Holy cow.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Terry, Church Ministries Leader for the Alliance.
And I'm Alan, the Director of Development for the Eastern PA District of the Alliance.
And today we're going to be talking to Scott Kuby. Who is the new president of Orchard Alliance, fairly new. He's been at it for about a year and a half. And we're going to be talking to him about finances in general, church finances, faith in finance, some new initiatives that Orchard Alliance has that will be helping Alliance churches and leaders. Alan, any observations about Orchard Alliance?
You know, I've been in the Alliance long enough now to know that I've really appreciated the way, of course, it wasn't Core Orchard Alliance back in the day,
right?
But the way it's become and developed over these last few decades and the way it generously serves the Alliance family. And I'm actually really thankful for this this connection we have.
I am too. So grab yourself a spicy Aztec organic hot chocolate from Lake Champlain Chocolate Company.
Wow.
Sit back, relax. Here we go. And we're pleased to welcome Scott Kuby to Equipping You Podcast today. Our good friend from Orchard Alliance. Scott, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me and really excited to be here.
Yeah. Great to have you here. So we like to let our listeners get to know our guests a bit. We don't want them to know too much about our guests, but tell us a bit of your story, how you came to know Christ, your family, and how you became part of this Alliance family of ours.
Yeah, so I'll skip forward to high school and college. I started getting a lot more serious about my faith, some in high school, actually, and did the weird step of not joining a church, but leaving one, because wasn't one that I really felt was committed to the things that they actually taught. And that led me on a search that, by the time I was a senior in college, I ended up starting to attend a Southern Baptist church about a block and a half from my dorm at Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas, where I went to school, and just really became very committed from that point on in my life. I moved back to Nebraska, where I'm from originally, and after about a year or two, I started attending Christ Community Church for the high-minded reason of knowing that my best friend's very outgoing sister attended there.
Yeah.
And I thought that she would have friends that would help me get dates. So there you go. That's the And by the time I got there, she'd moved on because she might have been a little flighty at the same time. And but I stayed and loved it and really grew in that church. And with a few, I had a small, short move in between there, but really from 92 on, that was my church home up until we moved to Colorado Springs to join Orchard Alliance. I have two sons, an old one and a young one, as I like to say, one in his 20s, one and eight. My wife and I, Sherry, she does some tremendous ministry around here and volunteers. Poor lady has also now become the volunteer leader of the birthday celebrations at Orchard Alliance. So she really does some stuff in addition to raising our son. And so that's how I got into the Alliance and ended up becoming the after a number of years of doing different activities of teaching primarily in kids ministry and serving in there, I got tapped for a leadership class and eventually became an elder and the treasurer of the church. And continue to serve in that capacity until I came to Orchard.
Yeah. And now you're at New Spring Church. Is that correct?
That is correct. And just having a blast there, as it's a different type of church than the one I was used to. But, you know, as I like to say, I can go to any type of church as long as Jesus shows up. And so that's what I love. It's been just a blast to serve with Spencer Sweeting, who's our lead pastor.
Yes, my friend Spence. Yes.
Tremendous, tremendous man. So just
I'm thankful for him.
Talked to him last night in the parking lot as I was leaving. So
I am jealous. I am jealous. Please tell him you talked to me.
I will.
Well, one of the things that we love about this, one of our favorite questions is actually to ask all of our guests, who are two, three, maybe even four, if you got one up your sleeve, leaders who have been influential in shaping your life.
Yeah, so I could pick a lot on this question. First one I would pick is Mark Ashton, who's been the lead pastor of Christ Community now for the majority of time that I attended that church. It was just really influential to see his passion for lost people, the joy that he found in serving God. And you know what? There was, during the time I was there, there were some great moments. There were some really tough moments. And I, you know, he just never lost sight of what was most important about serving Jesus, about serving the people of the Omaha area. So you like to say, oh, we want to make it hard to go to hell from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah.
And that was something that he just radiates every day. And so that's just been tremendous from that side. I also would pick, when I was Christ meeting, Rob Murphy, who was he ended up being the executive pastor, but he also was a singles pastor for a time as well. And he really invested a lot in me in that period of time when I was learning to teach in adult classes, encouraged me to go in and just really encouraged me instead. And I think pushed some things that allowed me to get to that next level of experience with church. And that was really impactful for me getting here today. The other person I would pick, although I've never met him, I don't know if I've ever seen him speak, but Dallas Willard is someone I really look up to, partly because you listen to the people that he invested in. And I'm also a bit of an intellectual type thinker, approach of how I look at things. And so he was just an amazing thinker, amazingly committed to Christ, but also amazingly committed to seeing that kingdom expand and investing in leaders. That's something as I get into this stage of my leadership, I want to make sure I continue to do those things as well, because that's just amazing the type of the people that I listen to and learn from, especially some of the younger people that he invested in and are now getting up that space where they're getting a national type of platform. It's just amazing what he did. And I really look up to that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. He's on my list of top mentors I've never met personally.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which is kind of a strange thing, but it's a, you know, one thing I kind of referenced just an aside, but I am so impressed with the young people that are so committed to Christ now, you know, whether they were residents or assistant or junior pastor type levels of Christ Community or people I just run into, man, the younger generation is so focused on God and so focused on how we can be authentically representing Christ in the world. And I can learn from the old, the most that I've never met that have passed away, but also those that are 20 years younger than I am. I just try to keep learning all the time.
Amen.
Love it.
Amen. It gives you hope for the future, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Quite a lot, frankly.
So, Scott, you were an investment guy.
Yep.
How did you transition out of the marketplace into Orchard Alliance? Tell us about that process and how you sense the Lord leading you.
Yeah, you know, so the short answer is probably Mark Ashton handed me a brochure, which was you should apply and said you should apply for this position. And that was a very immediate step.
But God loves you and I have a wonderful plan for your life.
I have a wonderful plan for you. That's exactly right. And so that was really the most proximate push. But I would say actually my wife and I had felt for a number of years that God was calling us into still 3, 4, 5 years down the line to take some sort of an earlier retirement and move into a faith and finance type of space. And so really sensed God's call in that way, was really devoted to answering it. And then one day it just showed up about 4 years earlier than expected. And I'm like, but this was it. We prayed over it, not very long, because it was really obvious, like, ah, this is an opportunity that I've been training for and experiencing and being engaged. I've been doing stewardship ministry at Christ Community for a number of years, the opportunity to step into the treasurer's role. I'd actually done due diligence on Orchard Alliance twice as treasurer, just to understand how it worked, because we obviously had money invested here as well. And so that was just a lot of a big move forward, in the sense of that was where God was calling us. And this is what showed up on the docket as the thing to do, and we wanted to do obedient to that call. The one thing I'll say is the transition from the marketplace to here was not as hard as I thought it was going to be. Some of it because it had started 5-6 years earlier, when I had become a treasurer and really got engaged with the church in a much deeper way. I really felt like, wow, I'm an ideas person. I come up with a lot of them. And I had a lot of ideas in the investment firm, but even about into my second 3-year term as treasurer, I started to realize, man, my church ideas are actually better than my investment ideas. And so I was really hooked. I just loved working in that space. The other thing I think that sometimes pastors don't appreciate as much is that, man, the marketplace is really engaged in, we have a mission, and that mission isn't just to make money, but it's a mission to serve people in a particular way. And so that commitment became very, very powerful. And so as we moved over here, it's a higher commitment. It's a better commitment. But you know what? It's not as different from the marketplace as I think some people assume it to be.
Yeah. That's helpful. So why don't you just go on and give us more of a thumbnail sketch of Orchard Alliance and how it might provide some help to our listeners and the churches they attend.
Sure. Yeah. So Orchard Alliance serves the Alliance family where faith and finance meet. And so if you can remember that sort of, where's faith and finance connect, that's the space that we live. We do that for churches. We do that for individuals. Our real goal is to encourage a greater level of stewardship and generosity within the Alliance. And so that is where our hearts sit the most. And to make sure that stewardship is not just stewardship of individuals' assets, but also of churches and church buildings and pieces along those lines. Our goal is really for those churches and individuals to thrive financially. So we want the individuals of the Alliance to do very well. But the other thing is, we want the churches to be really well situated to fund the mission that God has. One of our deeply set goals and really motivators is, if there is a God-inspired vision in the Alliance, our vision, I don't know if we'll ever get there, but our vision is that vision would not lack for money. That whatever God inspires, that we want to make sure that the financial resources are not the thing that causes it to fail or to not happen. And so that really sits very deeply with us. So we do that a couple different ways. Right now, we have an awesome group of depositors, some churches, some individuals that want to have their savings somewhere and want to see a kingdom return on those savings at the same time as they're available for them if they need them and want to get some interest. We do all of those things. And we take that money and we often lend it to churches in order that they can expand, buy their first building, go out and add that community center or gym that they really need to reach that next group of young people in their community. We love doing that. The other thing that we've really started to focus on even more, though, is a stewardship and generosity of causing that thriving churches of getting, so we can get information and get an opportunity to disciple people and strengthen the ability of the church to disciple its people financially. And then from that, ultimately, we expect some of those folks to come into and enter our gift and estate design team, where we help sit down with individuals, with super qualified, well-trained people, to work through what God is calling you to do with your estate so that you can give through your will or your estate plan, as well as giving at the current time.
Great. So one of the things Orchard Alliance helps us understand is that many people want to give something other than cash gifts in the offering plate to the church. So you guys have that picture of the iceberg that's got a little bit above the water and a lot below the water. So what do people want to give, and how can Orchard Alliance help?
Yeah, sometimes I wonder whether we should change our logo to the iceberg from, but my marketing team's going to hear that and they're like, you should never have said that. But,
yeah, they're going to tell you to stick to your day job.
Stay in your lane, God. Stay in your lane.
But it's a good point in the sense that there is so much below. One of the stats that came out recently is the Census Bureau said that 45% of families headed up by someone 55 to 74. So that's a little bit of a technical thing. Think of 45% of 55 to 74 year olds are in a family that has a net worth above $1 million. That's a really large, that went to college. I should add that in, that went to college. For people that didn't go to college, that number is still 25%. In other words, if you're pastoring a church of 150 or 200 people, you've got a decent number of millionaires that are in your congregation. And so one of the things we know about millionaires is they don't save like people that have $30,000 in wealth. You know, $30,000 wealth, you're probably at a bank. But by the time you get up to that level, you've got retirement plans, you've got individual stock investments. It's not so unlikely that some of that money came from an inheritance that was given to you. And so there are a lot of those assets that are below the waterline. That's where the vast majority, and as wealth goes up, the amount of assets that are sitting in just straight cash, they actually start to go down as a percentage level. And so we really want to be able to help the churches tap in to those assets and be able to say, not only can we reach those assets from their current giving, but are there ways that we would like to make a larger gift, like in a campaign or in a particular initiative that's being funded, or something that might be a gift that occurs when they pass away as well. And so I think that's really, really powerful. And frankly, one of the things I would say too is, I don't think churches do a really good job at getting those gifts. I was talking to a planned giving person from a university that she recounted a story where this family had effectively the mom had funded the church. When you get down to it, bought the building and built it for them. She was effectively funding most of the pastor's salary. I mean, she was a major, major donor, and her son was running the money. He ended up passing away ahead of her. So she passed away second, and they had given and supported that church forever and ever and ever. And when it came time to their estate gift, the money all went somewhere else. Wasn't Alliance Church. That's good news because the church ended up closing. And it was closed in part because they didn't articulate a very good strategic vision for the long term, but partly also they just weren't well positioned. They didn't realize that how people give in their estate is a little bit different than how they give in the short term or their current income. And so if we don't help churches to get in touch with their congregants in a way that makes them into donors that are of major value, we're just leaving an awful lot of kingdom potential on the table by missing out on
that. Yep, that's good. So now Orchard Alliance has a partnership with Ron Blue and his organization, a highly respected organization for sure, and partnering under the banner of Faith and Finance. So what motivated this involvement and start moving in this direction?
Yeah, you know, Ron Bluth, as we've started to talk about him, he is one that if you're in the financial services area or you've been in stewardship and generosity, you're like, wow, that guy's amazing. And then there's that sort of thin line, and then people go, I haven't heard of Ron Bluth before in my life. And so why do we partner with him versus maybe somebody that was a little bit better known out there? A couple different reasons. One of them was that Ron Blue's focus as he was a financial planner for a really long time, worked a lot with wealthy Christians. And his organization and his perspective as a financial planner who worked with the wealthy is a lot different. What we found is his material didn't just connect with those people who were struggling with debt, but it also connected with those that had $3 million in assets or 5 or 10 or 15 million that were trying to figure out how they could be stewards of that wealth that God had blessed them with. And so they were just a much better partner from that side. They also took a similar approach to what we wanted to take, which was an approach of financial discipleship, of core principles that are applied, as opposed to maybe a bit more rules-based type of approach that can really help people that are struggling, but didn't tend to scale up as well. As wealth increases, people didn't continue to live or manage their finances away that way. And you know, if you've been in church for a while and you're pretty decent at managing finances and somebody comes in with a sermon about debt reduction, you're like, I need to catch up on my Bible reading plan during that. It's time to motor through those verses in Leviticus that I was struggling with last night, because you know it's not going to be particularly relevant. But what we found with Ron Blue's material is that it was really able to speak to all ranges. And I think, you know, one of the pieces the churches have to wrestle with is, if I'm not discipling people financially in my congregation, who is? Where are they getting that information? You know, you asked the question at the start about who are the leaders that affected you, but who are the people that are financially discipling your congregation? Is that Fidelity or Charles Schwab, who do some amazing things, but they aren't speaking from a Christian perspective? Is that CNBC? Is that Jim Cramer on there with the investment club? Is it the neighbor next door? Is it somebody who's trying to tell them to go and get as wealthy as you can? If you're not doing it, who's speaking into them in the way that they need to hear it? Because otherwise they end up without the joy of being generous, without the joy of stewarding those God's assets well. And so I really think that Ron Blue is a great group for us to partner with and to meet those the vast majority of the people in the church where they are.
So Scott, talk to us about what's involved in this program that you're partnering with Ron Blue to do. What does it contain that could be helpful to our listeners and their churches?
Yeah, one of the things that I really wanted to have was our first effort to the churches as we start to dive further into stewardship and generosity is we wanted to give something away. And so what we started out by giving away was a starter pack of some materials of Bible studies that you can either use in a small group or a life group or individually or more even more broadly from Ron Blue. So we've given away over 250 starter pack informations to churches. And if you get this and you've never gotten one, please reach out to us. We'd love to send you something for free in order to get that in your hands. But it's not just those materials. We have a website, faithandfinance.org, which is just out there and available and producing content on a regular basis that is designed to meet people where they are financially and answer those questions like, should I lease or buy a car, to how much should I give and what are the things that I should factor into those? So that whole realm of practical advice from a Christian perspective. We also have a web page, which is really designed to sit on the church's site to say, hey, folks, for those of you who want to give from those assets below the iceberg that aren't sitting in cash, we're someone who knows a way to receive that, and we're good at that. We're an open for business side of things. Most likely, they're not going to go through the website because people don't give $50,000 on a website that they haven't ever used before, but they'll call, they'll reach out, get them in touch with us as well. And what we continue to do is really what we're driving towards is working with churches to do stewardship seminars. So not only do we want to have something maybe for the older generation who needs to think about estate, but we also want to have things for younger people who may not have a will or a plan for if they, you know, if a parent, two parents are out and ended up passing away in a tragic car accident, who's in charge of their kids? Who are the folks that they want to receive them? How are they going to provide for them? And so when we do these seminars, what we're really trying to do is equip today's stewards for action. And that action step may be totally different based on everybody's situation, but that's our goal in order to do that. So it's really a partnership, not just of materials, not just of a website, but really working with us to drive down. Our goal is to lift that stewardship temperature of your church up higher. And to mix my metaphors a little bit to the parable of the seeds, what we want to do is create a soil in the churches that is willing to receive a financial discipleship, stewardship message, and really allow those people to grow to fund the next steps that are important in God's kingdom. Mm,
that's great.
That's good stuff. So you mentioned you were the treasurer of a church, and a large church at that. And for the lay leaders who are listening, what should a church do to care well for its pastors financially, but in other ways too?
Yeah, so one of them, I've talked to a... we just, you know, I inherited a very healthy financial situation at Christ Community Church. The leadership that had come before me, they were fantastic. They did an awesome job and they had some core principles. What I've realized as I've traveled around is those core principles aren't the same everywhere. So, you know what? Sometimes pastors who are really good at sacrificing themselves, a lot of them, probably the vast, vast majority of them, are paid much less than they could get out in the marketplace. But they've been called by God and they've answered that call and they've made some sacrifices. Sometimes pastors just keep on sacrificing. Oh, I don't need that pay. You know what? Somebody's got to sit there and make sure that the pastor and his family are in a position to take care of themselves financially. And don't rely on the pastor to make that statement. That'll be one. So that's what elders need to do. They're, you know, in our structure, they have a huge responsibility within the church, and they've got to own that. The other one I would just say is, you know, people ask me, like, you ask that marketplace question. People ask, what's it like inside the church? You know what? Living and serving inside churches is kind of messy. You know, people keep showing up in the church and none of them are perfect, including the lead pastor. And so to give some grace, to be an agent of grace, to go, wow, you know what? I just want to keep working with people. There's a little bit of a mess. You're like, oh, now I get to see how the sausage gets made inside the church. You know, it never bothered me because everybody was so focused. But if there are things that if you're the treasurer of a church, and your lead pastor just feels drained every time they have to have a budget discussion, you know, cover the budget discussion for them. Be the person that's handling that. Summarize it in a way that they can express it. And don't make or expect them to always step into places that God just didn't equip them to do. Maybe that's the reason you're on the leadership team, is to do that. And so just support them, give them your trust, and fill in for them so that the whole church, so they can stand out as leaders of the church that God's called and be able to serve primarily in their strengths to the greatest degree as they can. And I think God looks down at people that do that, whether known or unknown, and says, wow, that's a well done from that servant there.
Yeah, I appreciate that, your first statement there about pastors sacrificing. And I'd like to maybe draw attention to a very specific group of pastors, church planners. Right. Then yep. When they start out, they're often making major sacrifices because there's limited resources. You don't have a lot of people giving yet. And then so they sacrifice salary and then they never catch up.
Yeah,
that's correct.
And so if you're a church out there, if you're a listener and you got a church plant, you're in a church plant or you have a church that's helping to support a church plant, please make sure that, you know, that church planner, you know, praise God for their sacrifice in your early years. So the church gets established. But then do what you can to help them to catch up because they're probably behind.
Right.
And, you know, I was saying, if you can personify who you're serving, it really helps. Don't personify the pastor, personify the pastor's wife.
Oh, that's good.
Because that, you know, especially if it's a lead church plant, the male church plant, if that woman has sacrificed a lot as part of free. And so are we taking really good care of the pastor's wife? And if you are, then you've probably taken care of that because he's going to sacrifice. That's what you know, church plant. It's a great point. That's actually where it's absolute worst. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good word about the pastor's wife too. That really helps to make it more personal and caring. I think
somewhere my wife is saying, amen.
I'm sure she is. I'm sure she probably feels it.
Or too late. One of the two.
Yeah. Well, is that a commentary on my age?
Well, you're not church planning anymore.
Well, that's true.
That's, yes.
But he could.
Yeah. He could. He could. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a good point.
I'm glad you guys have that kind of confidence in me at this late phase of life. So, Scott, many of our
100% Terry
listeners, pastors, small to mid-sized churches, they're not getting wealthy doing what they're doing. What can they do to prepare well for retirement, and at what season of life should this begin?
Yeah, so one of the things I did in asset management is I got to, we used to serve a lot of people in 401k plans, and that was an opportunity for us to see that all 401k, you think about sermons tend to repeat the same topics, that 401k is the most unimaginative education things I've ever seen. Everything centers around a few main points. One of them is, start as early as you can. save consistently, take some risk, and if the market goes down, don't pull it out. That's it. Those are all the pieces. So whatever your age at, if you haven't started saving, start saving, and you need to save a decent amount. A lot of people are in that, you know, anywhere from 7 to 12% of salary. A lot of people, if you want a rough, simple heuristic, around 10% tends to be a fairly manageable part. But if you're starting to save for the first time in your 50s, that percentage is going to have to be higher for you to maintain that lifestyle during retirement. The one thing I would tell Christians, is, you know, is working with Christians from an investment standpoint, is for whatever reason, we tend to, you know, in the secular world, there are people who are trying to get rich on their money. That does not happen as often within the church world. But I'll tell you, the church people tend to put more security in their money than a lot of people do on the outside in the secular world. And they tend to be very safe. They tend to not take risks. And they also tend to get freaked out when something happens, whether it's the wrong political party gets elected, or there's an event in Israel, or something happens somewhere else, and they start pulling their money out. So when I used to do seminars for people, I would say, you know what, when you look back at how the stock market performed during the when Barack Obama was president, it performed very well. And when Donald Trump was president, it performed very well. Now, if you're super politically engaged, one of those two people is not one of your favorite presidents of all time. It may be one or it may be the other, but they're both not sitting one and two on that list. And yet, your investment portfolio, if you had pulled it out because Donald Trump was elected, you'd pulled it out because Barack Obama was elected, all you did was do a lot of harm to your financial portfolio. They left a lot of money on the table that could have been there. And so I'm saying, just, you know what, the system works. Don't overreact to those events. If you haven't started saving, start saving. And I'll tell you the last one that I see folks most is participate in Social Security if you can, if you still have that choice available to you. It really makes a big difference for it. It provides a lot of a floor underneath you as far as your support, depending on how things go well or poorly. And so those would be some of the big things that I would say. Just don't put it, save it. Save it consistently and look at it as little as infrequently as you can, because you'll probably be better off.
Yep. Thank you. Good advice. So one last question. We haven't prepared you for this one. You're a Minnesota Twins fan. We're recording this on, there you go.
Look at that. Holding up the cup.
We are recording this on December 13th, 2023. It will air on May 15th. 2024. At that point in the season, the Twins will have played approximately 40 games.
40 games.
So we're going to ask you to prognosticate
I love it.
Their record on that date and what place they will be in the AL Central.
Wow.
AL Central. Wow. I will project 22-18. And I will put that in the AL Central. That should be good enough for a small lead at first place.
All right.
That's a very reasonable prediction.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. It is a reasonable prediction. Hey, Scott.
I also say, don't gamble off of my baseball predictions 5 months before, 6 months before the date of them. That's that. In fact, just don't gamble. That's exactly. Actually
that's probably better
advice. We've talked about investing here, not gambling. So, hey, we really appreciate you. Glad you're at the helm of Orchard Alliance.
Absolutely.
And thanks for taking the time to chat with us today.
Well, it's great working with both of you. And Terry, we get to see bump into each other at places all around the country. It's just been an absolute joy to serve with you and get to know you better, even if you are a Braves fan.
Yeah, that goes both ways, even if you are a Twins fan.
And Red Sox fans, like, you know, it's all good.
What is it? Is it 1990 or 91?
91.
Thank you. All right. Yeah. Jack Morris, right? That name's special to you, right, Terry?
I think we could have won game 6, but I think it was Kirby Puckett that hit home run in the 10th inning off of some left-handed pitcher that shouldn't have been out there. and then Jack Morris pitches a gem. Somewhere in there, so Kent beautiful. Herbeck pushes one of our guys off first base and tags him out.
I think he actually pushes, then lifts in order to make sure that he doesn't get back.
Yes.
It's a good example of things, which is replay is really a nice thing to have, even if it does take a little bit while, because Ron Gant was safe on that, but there's no doubt about it. It also tells us that you talk about good investing habits. Have a shorter memory than Terry does about baseball when you're thinking about your investment.
There you go. There you way go. To turn it that's, back that's around there.
Bring back.
There
back
that's right. That's right. So.
Thank you for joining us, Scott, on Equipping You Leadership and Sports Podcast. Appreciate you being here today.
That's right.
Blessings, guys. We'll see you later.
Yeah.
I'll catch you.
So shockingly, Alan, we got a little off topic there at the end of the interview.
Who'd have thought that could ever happen with us? So focused and undistractable normally.
Never happened before, but it happened once.
Yeah.
So, hey, love Scott.
Yeah.
And he's fun and knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
When it comes
at least about finance.
Yeah.
Right.
Baseball, we'll see.
Yeah.
But certainly finance, and grateful for his insights that he shared with us today about investing and the long haul and short memory and those kinds of things. Anything you said that really stuck out to you?
Well, this is something I highly value is having a generosity mindset.
Yep.
You know, because we think we can times in ministry because out of a motivation to sacrifice to the Lord and to be good stewards, sometimes we can have a scarcity mindset and start thinking there's not enough. But we serve the owner of a cattle on a thousand hills and the owner of everything else. You know, we need to have a generous mindset that our Father will take care of us. And as they always say, where God guides, God provides.
Amen.
And believe that.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So thank you, listeners, for joining us. We hope you enjoy the podcast, but we also hope you benefit from the podcast in your personal life and ministry. We love what we get to do in this venue, and we hope you'll share it with others if you're benefiting from it and enjoying it. And next time, we're going to have Irma Chan, who works in a ministry through her local church with immigrants and refugees.
Looking forward to that.
So, looking forward to it. Until then, keep the faith.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Equipping You podcast. If you liked this episode, please consider subscribing and sharing it with a friend. For more information about this podcast and other ministries of the Alliance, visit equippingyou.org.